28-year-old Danielle Stislicki was working for an insurance company alongside her mother in Southfield, Michigan. A Michigan native, Danielle had grown up in Redford and had strong connections to the area. She had a large circle of friends, a strong relationship with her siblings, and was thought of by almost everyone who knew her as a bubbly, sweet, and kind person with a tremendous heart. Life may not have gone exactly as she planned, but she still had dreams she was seeking to fulfill, and she wasn't shy about sharing them with those she cared about. On the evening of December 2, 2016, Danielle spoke to her best friend about meeting up for dinner. After requesting and receiving an early release from work around 5 p.m., she texted her friend and let her know that she was getting out early, stopping back at her apartment, and then coming to meet her for dinner around 6 p.m. Everything seemed to be going according to plan, but Danielle never showed up. She had been working a lot and had a shift the next morning, so her friend thought it was possible she'd fallen asleep when she stopped home. When no one, including her best friend, had gotten an answer from her throughout the next 14 hours, concern began to grow, and her best friend went to Danielle's apartment. To her surprise, she found Danielle's Jeep parked in its assigned spot, just 8 feet away from the apartment door. However, she couldn't get Danielle to come to the door. Concerned, she called Danielle's parents, who arrived with their spare key, and found the apartment appeared as though Danielle had never arrived home the previous evening. They phoned police, and the search began. Almost from day one, investigators believed foul play had been involved. Over the course of the next year, investigators would conduct multiple searches, speak to friends and family, as well as co-workers and ex-boyfriends. No one seemed to have any idea what could have happened to Danielle, though they believe she had been abducted. Several witnesses came forward and gave police the name of a man who they believe may have been involved in Danielle's disappearance. While authorities would later name this individual as a person of interest, others have argued that this crime may have been committed by someone else, and that the police department's tunnel vision may have compromised the case. Who abducted Danielle Stislicki? To this day, the question remains unanswered, though since the investigation began, many feel that the likely perpetrator is the very man that police have their sights set on. This is Trace Evidence, Episode 37, The Disappearance of Danielle Stislicki. Welcome to Trace Evidence. I'm your host, Stephen Pacheco. Today, I look into the disturbing disappearance of Danielle Stislicki from Southfield, Michigan in December of 2016. Before getting into the case, just a few notes about the show. Trace Evidence is a weekly true crime podcast focused on missing persons and unsolved murders. We are available across multiple platforms and on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, and many more. Trace Evidence has a Patreon for those of you who wish to support the podcast. It can be found at patreon.com/traceevidence. This podcast is a complete one-man operation, so if you enjoy it and wish to help support it, please check out the Patreon page. I've also set up a one-time PayPal donation link on the main website for those of you who wish to contribute but don't want to use Patreon. Links, information, and more items, including YouTube videos and full episode transcripts, can be found on the website at trace-evidence.com. If you'd like to contact me, you can email me at traceevidencepod@gmail.com. Tweet me at traceevpod, that's TRACEEVPOD. Add me on Instagram at traceevidencepod, or join the Facebook discussion group simply by searching for Trace Evidence Podcast or clicking the direct link on the website. If you have questions, comments, or case suggestions, I'd love to hear from you. As a final note, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review it on whatever app or platform you're listening on. The more ratings and reviews the show gets, the easier it becomes to find the podcast, and the more attention can be given to the cases that I cover. Today's episode examines the disappearance of Danielle Stislicky, last seen exiting the building where she worked on December 2nd, 2016. There's been a great debate about whether or not Danielle ever made it back to her apartment that night, and while this case is the most recent I've ever covered, that does somewhat limit the information available. However, this is an important case, one of the most listener-requested cases I've ever done, and one which only needs a little break to be solved. This is Episode 37, The Disappearance of Danielle Stislicky. Danielle Ann Stislicky was born on February 28, 1988, to parents Ann and Richard Stislicky. She was raised in the town of Redford, Michigan. Redford Township is a western suburb of Detroit and covers 11.2 square miles, with the River Rouge flowing through the Lola Valley Park. According to a 2010 census, the population of Redford is approximately 48,362. Danielle was an energetic young girl who adored the family dog, Midnight, with whom she grew up. Of Danielle, her mother Anne said, quote, "She was very welcoming to everyone. She's vivacious, she's beautiful, kind, big heart," end quote. Friends and family described Danielle as having a gregarious personality. She was lively, loved to laugh, and enjoyed to make others feel accepted and comfortable. Her personality gave her a certain charisma that drew others to her like a magnet, and at an early age, she developed a tight circle of friends, though many have said that Danielle was friendly with everyone she came across. Danielle was very close with her parents, and they doted on her with a loving adoration that is hard to describe. They saw a beautiful future for their daughter, a bright and gorgeous young woman who was full of possibility. Of his daughter, Richard would state, quote, "Danielle was our potential, the best of us," end quote. Danielle would later become an older sister, not once, but twice, when first Jillian and then Holly were born. It was a tight-knit family, with Danielle always being there to offer advice or a good laugh when the situation called for it, and sometimes even when it didn't. Most everyone in her life looked up to her and admired her fire and passion not only for life, but for those she cared about. Her welcoming disposition was apparent immediately, and friends and family often called her Danny rather than Danielle. Growing up in Redford, Danielle established a strong bond with several other young women: Jill Thompson, Megan Fishback, Christy Holm, Katie Wanamaker, Danielle Frederick, and Rachel Perel, along with Danielle, dubbed their group the Redford Girls, and they forged a bond which would last well into adulthood. Having gone to school together, their bonds run deep, and their friendships are strong and united. Over the years, they have gone to each other's weddings, taken vacations, and even established an annual tradition known as Friendsgiving, when they would all meet up in November to celebrate the holiday together. The celebration typically involved brunch, with a few mimosas, and a lot of conversation. When asked to describe Danielle, Christy Holmes stated, quote, "If she were here right now, she would be talking the whole time, and she would be telling you all of these crazy stories," end quote. Katie Wanamaker added, quote, "She'd be dancing. She'll be making you a drink. She'll be making food," end quote. Danielle began working in insurance for MetLife alongside her mother, Anne, in Southfield, Michigan. Though it was a good job that provided her with security, Danielle's friends have suggested that she dreamed of something more exciting for her career. On Sunday, November 27th, 2016, the Redford girls met up for their annual tradition, and according to Jill Thompson, quote, "It was the Sunday before she went missing. She came, like, busting in, and she was supposed to bring bagels," End quote. 28-year-old Danielle spent much of the event talking about her dreams for the future, her plans, everything she was hoping to achieve. She talked about wanting a little house, not too much, but enough, and the ideas of farming and sustainable foods. While Danielle talked about her ideas for the future and the life she was going to have, she and her friends laughed and shared stories. They enjoyed their annual tradition, and as life continued moving forward, the group would continue to share it all together. Sadly, none of the women present had any idea that this would be the last time they would ever see Danielle, and just 5 days later, the beautiful dreamer would go missing without any explanation, turning all of their worlds upside down. On Friday, December 2nd, 2016, Danielle had a busy day of work ahead of her, but her mind began roaming to the upcoming weekend. Though she had to work on Saturday, she had made plans with her mother to take a drive to her grandparents' house on Sunday. The family was planning to decorate the Christmas tree and begin ushering in the holiday season. Being that her weekend was already packed with work and family plans, Danielle went ahead and contacted her best friend, Sarah Pollock, seeing if she were available that night. The two made plans to meet up for dinner later, after Danielle got off work. Interested in getting a jump start, and knowing she had to return the next day for work, Danielle asked if she could leave early. According to her father, Richard, quote, "That particular day, she was scheduled to work longer, and because things were a little slow, she asked whether or not it would be okay if she left early," end quote. According to Anne, at approximately 5 p.m., Sarah received a text from Danielle which read, quote, "I got off early. I just need to stop home quickly, and I'm on my way," end quote. Danielle was renting a place at Independence Green Apartments, located near Halsted Road and Grand River Avenue in Farmington Hills, Michigan. Her apartment complex was located approximately 12 miles from the MetLife building where she worked, and with traffic permitting, this added up to a 15-minute drive on average. Witnesses saw Danielle exiting the MetLife building, located in the 25,000 block of Telegraph Road in Southfield. She was seen getting into her black 2015 Jeep Renegade and driving in the direction of her apartment. What happened afterward remains unknown, but Danielle never made contact with her friend or anyone else after that text message. Danielle was supposed to meet Sarah around 6 p.m., but the time came and went with no Danielle. Sarah tried calling her, but received no answer. Not immediately worried, Sarah knew Danielle worked a long day and had another shift the next morning. She didn't panic, and assumed Danielle may have fallen asleep when she arrived home. Sarah expected to hear from her, but when Danielle hadn't contacted her by the next morning, she could no longer contain her worry. Sarah got into her car and drove over to the apartment complex and was, at first, comforted to find Danielle's Jeep parked in her space, no more than 8 feet away from the door to her apartment. It quickly became clear to Sarah that something was wrong. After trying to get Danielle's attention, she placed a call to Anne and Richard. Anne would later say, quote, "So Sarah called. She had actually gone to Danielle's apartment and said, 'I have screamed, I have honked, I have thrown pebbles up to the windows to get Danielle's attention, and there's no answer from Danielle.' And she said, 'I'm nervous, I'm scared, and I think you need to come.'" End quote. Danielle's parents made the drive over to her apartment and, after failing to receive an answer at the door, used their spare key to gain entrance. Almost immediately upon walking inside, they knew something was wrong, as it appeared that, despite Danielle's Jeep being parked out front, no one had been in the apartment and Danielle was nowhere to be found. After looking through the apartment, Danielle's parents noted only two items missing from it: her car keys and her cell phone. Panicked now, and without any idea of where Danielle could be, Anne made a call to 911 and reported her daughter missing. Officers arrived at the apartment and looked through it, though they found no indications of foul play inside. Several phone calls were placed to Danielle's phone, but it was going straight to voicemail, which led officers to believe it could have been powered off, the battery may have died, or the phone could be in an area with no service. After looking through her apartment, investigators stepped outside and began looking at her Jeep. It was quickly noticed that her purse, credit cards, ID, and wallet were inside the vehicle. Authorities would later speculate that they considered it a possibility that Danielle had not been the one to drive her Jeep home, though they would not expand on what led them to believe this. Police made the decision to brief the media and released information regarding Danielle. Lieutenant Jeff King of the Farmington Hills Police Department explained that Danielle's family described her as the type of person to always maintain contact with friends and family, and that her being out of contact was very out of character. When asked about a possible crime, King responded, quote, "No evidence found at this time to lead us to believe that foul play is involved, but the investigation continues. The reason she is missing is not the issue. Our concern is for the welfare and safe return of Danielle at this time." End quote. According to the release, Danielle was last seen wearing jeans, burgundy boots, a black zip-up shirt, and a blue Eddie Bauer coat. Rather quickly, the police, along with Danielle's friends, family, and volunteers, initiated a search of the area and any locations Danielle may have been known to frequent. Christy Holm later said about the search, quote, "Her apartment complex is kind of sprawling, so there's lots of ditches and swampy areas everywhere, and dumpsters. It's terrifying. Every car that you peek in, to think, what if I find something? But to think, what if I don't?" End quote. While the search was being conducted, other officers were canvassing the area for possible witnesses who may have seen Danielle arriving home the previous evening. Almost immediately, the media jumped on the story, and in their haste, often reported contradictory details or cryptic statements which would later be corrected. But at the time, these statements caused a great deal of speculation about Danielle's state of mind, with the rumor mill churning out suggestions of drug abuse, anorexia, or even bipolar disorder. Much of this was later cleared up, but at the time, it only added confusion to an already perplexing mystery. The body of a Caucasian female was found not far away 2 days after Danielle disappeared. And while authorities stated from the outset that they did not believe it to be Danielle, several papers ran articles stating that it may in fact be her, but the decedent was later identified as a different woman. While investigators failed to gain much information from potential witnesses in the area, other witnesses did come forward who claimed to have seen Danielle on the night she disappeared. Several people from the MetLife building spotted Danielle that night, and according to Richard, quote, "It has been reported by some people that work in the building that there was a car out there with its hood up," end quote. According to the witnesses, there was a man looking at the engine, and he was seen talking to Danielle. Further investigation provided a name to the man beneath the hood, Floyd Galloway Jr. Galloway Jr. worked as a security guard at the building, and according to Anne, he may have had a crush on Danielle. In an interview, she stated, quote, "The frequency in which he would seek her out, you know, walking around the office, particularly showing up by her cubicle. Danielle was friendly with Floyd, and that was it," end quote. According to Anne, Danielle had no interest in Floyd beyond friendship. Her kind and welcoming nature opened her up frequently to conversations with men, and the fact that she was young and attractive usually brought them around a little more than normal. According to Anne, Danielle became even more determined to ensure that there was no flirting between she and Galloway Jr. when she learned that not only was he married, but that he had a wife at home who had been diagnosed with cancer. Authorities became suspicious of Galloway Jr. rather quickly, but he hired a lawyer and refused to speak to authorities without his presence. Livonia Police Chief Curtis would later state, quote, "Mr. Galloway was the last person seen with Danielle Stislicki. It raises serious questions," end quote. Galloway Jr.'s lawyer, Jim Williams, responded, quote, "He was represented by counsel, and he was made well aware of the constitutional protections of the Fifth Amendment, the right against self-incrimination, and the right to remain silent," end quote. Without further information than a sighting of Danielle near Galloway Jr. the night she vanished, authorities didn't have much to work with, and so they continued their searching. Flyers were printed up showing Danielle, her cell phone, a Samsung Galaxy Core Prime in a rose gold case, her jacket, and a charm which was attached to her keychain and described as a yellow figure with a green body and yellow legs. The flyer also shows Danielle's 2015 black Jeep Renegade with Michigan license plate DGH8957, in hopes that someone may have seen Danielle driving the night she disappeared. The Independence Green apartment complex, along with MetLife, contributed money to a reward for information leading to Danielle's whereabouts or an arrest in connection with her disappearance. By December 7th, just 5 days after Danielle was last seen, the reward totaled $125,000. On December 7th, authorities and Danielle's family held a press conference. Ann and Richard spoke about Danielle and the support they'd received from the community. I will now play an excerpt from that press conference.
Coverage as we continue search for Danielle. We are totally amazed at the amount of support from friends and family and how it's extended beyond our immediate friends and family to their families and the mothers. They really stand out. They have that bond with their children and other people's children. And they have just been of such tremendous help. I think it's important to start with that before they get lost in that shuffle, that nobody understands that bond even more than a mother. And we really appreciate all their help and all our friends and family's help.
Again, thank you for your time. Can I show a visual of the car?
You may, sure, but we will have it available to all of our students.
Like you said, there's going to be a lot more photos, but I do want to go ahead and make a plea to everyone. Danielle would have left MetLife at the Telegraph driveway, and I'm asking for everyone to look and think back on Friday. When you were driving home, were you in anywhere of the vicinity of Telegraph? Were you anywhere in the vicinity of where Independence Green is, between Independence Green and where the MetLife location is and Telegraph? Think about when you were sitting in traffic, when you were driving, did you see or happen to see the somewhat dirty vehicle? Did you happen to see Danielle sitting, driving? If you were, what was her impression, or what was your impression of her facial expression? Our concern is that Danielle is somewhere being held, not by her choice, and wants to come home, and we want to bring her home. So we're asking if you could just think about your drive home on Friday. Did you see the vehicle? What did you see? The license plate, even. Whatever we can, we're looking for that connection between...
Was she alone in that vehicle?
Right. And what happened that there is no... There's nothing. Danielle would not just leave her best friend hanging. They were supposed to go ahead and have, you know, a meeting together. Danielle just doesn't randomly not show up. Danielle makes the commitments, keeps to them. It was important for her to meet with her best friend that day. And we are incredibly, incredibly concerned that she is not here. So anything that you guys can do to go ahead and in the public, please share this across the United States. We know that there's an opportunity that she may not be in Michigan anymore. So we're looking for anybody to go ahead. And the way you can help us is help spread this across the world. Spread this to your family, co-workers, talk about it. I ask you, I plead as a family, as a mother, from the deepest of my heart, help us bring Danielle home for everybody. Although we stand here as a family, there is a huge community out there that Danielle belongs to, and we need to go ahead and bring her home. Thank you.
3 days later, on December 10th, with no new leads and a growing frustration amongst investigators, friends and family organized a candlelight vigil. The vigil draws a little over 100 supporters, made up of friends, family, and total strangers. The Stislicki family speaks strongly about their dedication to finding Danielle and bringing her home. Anne also shares her feelings about the outpouring of support they have received from the community. During the vigil, she states, quote, "You become weak, and you feel like you can't push any further, and there's something there, and there's a Facebook post, and there's someone saying, I'm getting you this, I'm finding you the opportunity to go ahead and put her face and information on a bulletin board. That is the support that, although you may not know it, that has been what has kept us going," end quote. Several more days would pass before there would be any further information publicly released. For the most part, friends and family continued papering the area with flyers and using social media to promote their hunt for Danielle. Facebook became extremely active in the investigation, with Danielle's sisters posting about her disappearance, which garnered attention from people all throughout the area. The entire community seemed to come together in hopes of bringing in answers and finding Danielle. While, for the most part, all those involved, including investigators, tried to remain positive in their briefings to the media, things took a turn on December 19th. In a briefing to the press, a Farmington Hills Police Department spokesperson stated, quote, "All available information and evidence leads investigators to believe Danielle Stislicki was the victim of a crime. Investigators have worked tirelessly since Danielle was reported missing. Farmington Hills detectives and evidence technicians have received extensive assistance and resources from federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies," end quote. The spokesperson reiterated that the police department was determined to solve the case and bring answers to the family, but that it was important that they keep information secured. Later in the statement, the spokesperson said, quote, "All of the investigating agencies want the Stislicki family and the public to know that the law enforcement community is determined and committed to finding Danielle and solving this case. Investigators have collected evidence currently under analysis and examination. No information will be released regarding the specifics of the case in order to maintain the integrity of an active investigation. Investigators continue to follow leads in this case," end quote. On December 22nd, news reports began flooding out that authorities were in the process of searching a home in the Berkeley suburb of Detroit in connection with Danielle's disappearance. The home, located on Oxford Street, was searched by a joint team of the Farmington Hills Police Department and an Oakland County Sheriff's Department's forensics team. While authorities remained tight-lipped about what exactly they were looking for, it was reported that among other items removed from the house, they had taken a mattress in for analysis and examination. Farmington Hills Police Chief Nebus stated, quote, "Detectives, evidence technicians, and crime lab personnel from several law enforcement agencies have been working tirelessly and remain committed to finding Danielle and solving this case." End quote. As it turned out, the home was a place that Floyd Galloway Jr. had been staying previously. Floyd had last been witnessed speaking to Danielle as she was leaving her office the day she vanished. Elizabeth Newton, Galloway Jr.'s sister-in-law, spoke to the media regarding the search and her brother-in-law. According to Newton, her family would not discuss the case, and after several emails which she sent to Galloway Jr. without a response, she found it important to speak to police. Newton told the media about her conversations with authorities, stating, quote, "When I met with them, they told me there were eyewitnesses of Galloway Jr. and Danielle going into the Berkeley home together on December 2nd, and her Jeep being parked outside." End quote. Newton also told reporters that a portion of the floor and floorboards at the house and the car and family cars were taken as evidence. Police Chief Nebus, when asked about the items removed from the home, stated, quote, "We're moving in the right direction of positive developments. It's like putting together the pieces of a puzzle, and every day it seems like there is another piece that goes into the puzzle." End quote. According to neighbors, Floyd Galloway Jr. didn't return to the home after police searched it. According to reports of the time, Galloway Jr. and his wife moved in with her family around this time. Christmas and New Year's came and went. For Danielle's family, it was a difficult task to try and balance the holiday season with the absence of their daughter, their sister, their niece. It was a hard time of year for them, but they kept their spirits up and never looked away from their devotion to finding Danielle and solving her case. They still believed, somewhere, that there was hope that she may return home safely. Anstis Licky stated publicly several times that the possibility of abduction was a reality, and while it was difficult to think about it, it had to be considered. She also made it clear that, in her mind, Floyd Galloway Jr. was a likely suspect, and the more she thought about his flirtation with Danielle in the past, the more she felt something was wrong when it came to his possible connection to her disappearance. On January 12, 2017, a month and 10 days after Danielle was last seen, a second candlelight vigil was held, this time at VFW Post 345 in Redford Township. Hundreds attended the vigil, and even though it had been over a month, it was clear that public support for the family was continuing to grow. At the vigil, Anne spoke once again, stating, quote, "We don't know what happened to Danielle. What we do know is there is an incredible base of wonderful people like you." End quote. At the vigil, the community created burgundy ribbons for others to wear as an awareness of Danielle's disappearance. Burgundy was specifically chosen as it was the color of a dress Danielle had worn to a wedding, and family members said that they hoped the ribbons would be good conversation starters. That strangers might ask why someone was wearing the ribbon, and it would be an opportunity to spread Danielle's story and hopefully garner more information or leads. In Plymouth, Michigan, on January 28th, Second Nature Self-Defense, a women's self-defense instructional class, held a fundraiser from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The class was taught in two parts, with a $20 minimum being required to take the course that day. All proceeds from the fundraiser went towards helping the Stislicky family. It became clear that, unlike many other missing persons cases, which often create a great deal of attention at the beginning and then it wanes over time, Danielle's case continued to build up, drawing more and more people into it. While authorities continued working the evidence and processing materials taken from the Berkeley home, the community continued to rally around the family in hopes of assisting in any way that they might be able to. On February 2nd, 2 months after Danielle vanished, her parents sat down with Local 4's Karen Drew to discuss the case and Danielle herself. When asked about how they were holding up and how they managed to keep hope alive, Anne responded, quote, It's that lighthearted smile, the silliness. We talk about her as if she's still living in the apartment. Having that hope is why you have the energy to work at this pace, to only get a couple hours of sleep, because we want to make it happen as fast as we can. We want to be able to get Danielle back. End quote. According to Anne, they maintain direct contact with the investigators, often texting back and forth about details of the case or any new information that comes along. When asked about whether or not they believe Danielle was still alive, Richard responded, quote, "My logical mind would be predisposed to think that it was not going to turn out well. Until you tell me you have evidence differently, she is alive. So in my mind, the need to be able to protect ourselves is center focus." End quote. Chief Nebus was also asked about the case, and had several pieces of information to relay. Interestingly, despite previous public statements to the contrary, Nebus revealed that they considered it a case of foul play from day one. According to Nebus, they had several new developments, but, quote, "The bottom line is, we have to think of what's best for Danielle Stislicky in this case. Sometimes, in this particular case, it's been not to release information too early. It would be of no advantage to us. Part of the investigation right now is dependent on a lot of lab results coming back in." End quote. Weeks began passing, and then months, with no new information. The family continued advocating for Danielle, creating the social media hashtag FindDanny, as well as conducting a car wash in hopes of raising additional funds for continued search efforts, flyer production, and other necessities related to the search. A former neighbor of the Stislicky family, Rich Hoffman, posted the missing flyer on his front door. When asked about Danielle, he responded, quote, "I just remember Danielle as being so bubbly and just such a sweet kid. As the days and now the weeks and months drag on, it's just so disheartening to not know and to just wonder where she is and what happened." End quote. The more time passed, the more likely it seemed to become that Danielle was unlikely to be coming home alive. Although this was hinted about in the media of the time, authorities wouldn't make a comment on it. Danielle's family did several more interviews, specifically about the torment of not knowing what had become of Danielle, their struggles in coping with the pain of her disappearance, and their beliefs about what may have happened to her. During this time, investigators continued processing evidence from the Berkeley home and awaited lab results in regard to possible DNA. Though it wasn't publicly stated, it seemed apparent that authorities felt there was likely a connection between Danielle's disappearance and Floyd Galloway Jr., the man whose home they'd searched and who had last been seen speaking to Danielle. 6 months after she vanished, authorities would have much more to say about the man and his alleged connection to Danielle. On June 27th, Floyd Galloway Jr. was arrested by Livonia police on suspicion of his part in an attempted sexual assault which had taken place in Hines Park in September of 2016. According to police reports, a 28-year-old woman informed police that while she was jogging in the park, a man wrapped his arm around her neck and struck her on the side of the face. The woman fought bravely against her attacker, who began dragging her toward the Rouge River and then attempted to remove her clothing. According to the victim, her attacker blatantly told her that it was his intention to rape her. The woman managed to fight her way free and ran from the man, flagging down a passing driver who used his cell phone to call police. Galloway Jr., 30 at the time of his arrest, was arraigned the next day and charged with kidnapping, criminal sexual conduct with intent to commit penetration, and assault with intent to do great bodily harm by strangulation, as well as assault with intent to murder. Prosecutors requested a bail cost of $1 million, though it was ultimately set at $750,000. After his arrest, Allen Park police stated that they were working with the Livonia police to determine whether or not Galloway Jr. matched a composite drawing they had of a suspect in a different sexual assault case. At this time, the Farmington Hills police stated publicly for the first time that Galloway Jr. was in fact a person of interest in the disappearance of Danielle Stislicki. It was also at this time that they explained Galloway Jr. had been previously linked to Danielle as the result of a DNA test, though details were not fully disclosed, leading many to speculate that Danielle's DNA must have been found on items removed from the Berkeley home in which Galloway Jr. was staying at the time Danielle vanished. Reporters spoke to the Stislicki family after the arrest and asked them what they thought about Galloway Jr.'s possible connection. Anne responded, quote, "My initial reaction is scared. The outcome of the description of the jogger could be the fate of my daughter, and my daughter didn't get a chance to get out and get help. It's also a reality, the bravery of this person, to be so strong enough to fight him off and come forward," end quote. The next month, on July 19th, police, in conjunction with the FBI, began a search of Hines Park, the site of the attempted sexual assault for which Galloway Jr. was arrested. They were searching for any evidence which may have created a link to Danielle's disappearance. A total of 155 law enforcement officials, along with 14 canine units, cadaver dogs, and metal detectors were brought in for the search. Hines Park covers a large area, boasting a 17.2-mile trail, and is a popular place for locals to seek out recreational activities. Among the items being searched for were Danielle's blue Eddie Bauer jacket, her car keys, and cell phone. Authorities also stated they could possibly be looking for human remains, and interestingly, a tan and brown striped comforter which they believed could have been used to wrap Danielle's body. Discussion of human remains and body transportation caused the media to begin asking questions about whether or not they believed Danielle was still alive, or if they in fact thought she was murdered. Chief Nebus responded, quote, "Law enforcement authorities have expressed since day one that Danielle Stislicki was the victim of a crime. The facts of the case lead us to believe that she is not alive. Several land, air, and water searches have been conducted at various places throughout the investigation. Hines Park is being searched as the result of a recent Livonia and Farmington Hills joint investigation. This investigation has led to criminal charges in Livonia against Floyd Galloway Jr., a 30-year-old resident of Berkeley. Because the Livonia incident occurred in Hines Park, it is a location that requires searching. There is no specific information or evidence that leads us to believe Danielle's remains are in the park." End quote. The next day, after searching the park, authorities expressed that they had found nothing in the park. However, fairly rapidly, they returned to the Berkeley home with a search warrant in hand to execute a second search of the home and property. Sadly, upon arrival, authorities found the home had been cleaned out since their first search, and all that had been left behind was a surveillance camera system. As a result of the vacant house, authorities obtained a warrant and went to the home in Royal Oak, where Galloway Jr. had been staying with his wife and in-laws. They spoke to Galloway Jr.'s wife in regard to what they called, quote, "items of potential interest," end quote, and she handed over the items. Authorities described Galloway Jr.'s wife as being pretty uncooperative, and they further explained that when they arrived at the Berkeley house, she had been contacted and refused to unlock the door. They explained that they could simply knock the door in, at which point she did allow them access and afterward led them to the Royal Oak home. Several months would again pass with little movement on Danielle's case, though investigators assured the family and community that they were continuing to process evidence and follow up on information they'd been receiving. On November 21st, 2017, Galloway Jr. accepted a plea deal offered by the district attorney in regard to the September attempted sexual assault. In exchange for pleading guilty to kidnapping, criminal sexual conduct, assault with intent to do great bodily harm by strangulation, the charge of assault with intent to commit murder was dropped. Galloway Jr. faced a possible sentence of 16 to 35 years in prison and would have to register as a sex offender. This plea deal had been offered to Galloway Jr. twice before, but he had rejected it both times. For whatever reason, he accepted on the third pass, and prosecutors stated that the trial would have involved between 40 and 50 witnesses testifying and had been expected to last 3 weeks. At that time, Galloway Jr. was still considered a person of interest in Danielle's disappearance. The Stislicki family appeared in court to watch Galloway Jr. plead guilty to the charges. When asked about it later, Ann stated, quote, "We will not give up. We are here, and we will not give up. It was for us the opportunity to go ahead and let him know we are still here," end quote. Ann was asked how she felt when Galloway Jr. spoke in court that morning, to which she responded, quote, "It was unnerving. That is the Floyd Galloway I know, so I was glad he was advised to admit the guilt. We are grateful that the results of today's hearing means the Hines Park survivor does not have to go through and testify to a jury and relive that situation. Now it will give us an opportunity for all of the resources that have been on Danny's case, too, to go ahead, an opportunity to spend time on what we need to do," end quote. On November 30th, just 2 days before the one-year anniversary of Danielle's disappearance, Farmington Hills Police Chief Nebus spoke to the media about the progress of the case. He explained that a year later, authorities had made great strides in the advancement of the case and the collection of evidence. He told reporters that they had executed 74 search warrants throughout the year, though he would not disclose anything which may have been found, stating, quote, "We have to keep that confidential. I don't want to give the perpetrator any advantage of knowing all of the things we are gaining," end quote. Nebus went on to explain that Galloway Jr.'s plea could affect the case, though it was too soon to know in what way, and that in the previous 3 weeks, they had conducted multiple searches, under the radar, in southern Michigan based on tips they had received. He also expressed his concern for Danielle's family, saying, quote, "We want to give the Stislicki family closure in the case and get someone charged. There's not a day that goes by we don't think about them and think about Danielle," end quote. When asked if he believed the case would be solved, Nebus said the department felt very strongly they were going to solve the case and that they were very optimistic about its probable outcome. On December 8th, 1 year and 6 days since Danielle vanished, Floyd Galloway Jr. was sentenced to 16 to 35 years for his attack on the Hines Park jogger. The Stislickis were again in court to witness the sentencing and rejoiced at the result, feeling that Galloway Jr. had gotten what he deserved. The victim of his attack spoke out at his sentencing, saying that she hoped he would live each day of his life knowing that she was out in the world, happy and free, while he was imprisoned for trying to take advantage of her. Richard Stislicki stated about the survivor, quote, "It was almost like Danny's spirit was in her. She carries the same kind of spirit as Danielle. I was totally blown away. I'm relieved that this victim was able to survive and doesn't have to go through the ongoing court situation of being grilled or being reminded of that terrible experience," end quote. Danielle's best friend, Sarah Pollock, was also present that day. She was glad to see Galloway Jr. face justice for the attack he'd launched against the jogger, but also felt a sense of pain, knowing that the answers to Danielle's story were still unknown. In an interview, she stated, quote, "I'm so happy he's finally behind bars. I just want him to talk and tell us where Danielle is. It's not enough yet. To have her home would be closure. The constant wonder of where she is and when we're going to be able to say goodbye," end quote. Galloway Jr. is currently serving his sentence and has not yet responded to or spoken out in any way regarding Danielle's disappearance, only telling investigators that he was not involved and has no idea what could have happened to her. The disappearance of Danielle Stislicki is still a very new case, with her disappearance having been just over a year ago. The conviction of Floyd Galloway Jr. in connection to a different attack has led many to believe that he's the person responsible for Danielle's disappearance. But of course, in a case without answers, that's only the first theory. In Danielle's case, unlike so many others I've covered, there are only truly two theories about what may have happened to her. The first theory is that Danielle was abducted and murdered by the security guard from the MetLife building where she worked, and the man who was last seen with her, Floyd Galloway Jr. A great deal of evidence exists connecting Floyd to Danielle in multiple ways, and while authorities have not fully released all of the information they possess, for many, no more is needed to convict him in the court of public opinion. The second theory is that Danielle was the victim of a random crime by a yet unknown assailant who police are either aware of but have not named, or whose name has yet to be entered into the investigation. On February 28, 2018, Danielle Stislicki would have turned 30 years old. A tradition with her family was to celebrate her birthday and her uncle Chris's at the same time, since their birthdays were so close. For the second time in as many years, the family celebrated both of their birthdays, but again, Danielle wasn't there for the festivities. Her uncle Chris posted on Facebook saying, quote, "There's a big hole. We all have stuck together to cover that empty space, but it's still there. You can't avoid it, but what you can do is fill it with all of the great memories Danielle gave to us." End quote. Chief Nebus has continued to name Galloway Jr. as a person of interest, though he will not name an official suspect in the case, explaining that they do not name anyone as a suspect unless charges have been filed. Nebus believes there are others who have information about Danielle who need to come forward, stating, quote, "Sometimes the person doesn't know the information they have is important. Sometimes the person is afraid to come forward, and sometimes the person does not come forward because they choose to protect a killer or because they believe the person is innocent. I still believe the case will be solved, but I can't say when." End quote. When Danielle was last seen, she was described as being a Caucasian female, standing 5 foot 5 inches tall and weighing approximately 125 pounds. Danielle had brown hair and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a black shirt, blue jeans, burgundy boots, and a blue Eddie Bauer jacket. She has a tattoo of a constellation on her right shoulder and upper arm, often mistaken as being cheetah spots, as well as a tattoo of candy, peanuts, and popcorn on the top of her right foot. She was last seen at Telegraph and 10 Mile in Southfield, Michigan, at the Riley Office Center. Her vehicle, a 2015 Jeep Renegade, was discovered at her apartment complex 25 hours after she failed to be in contact. For Danielle's parents, the pain is still present every day. Danielle vanished from their lives a year and 3 months ago, and each day has been a challenge. However, they are supported by friends and a community which has never given up hope that the answers are coming. The family maintains a close relationship with authorities who have never stopped investigating and have continued to dedicate themselves to finding the truth. Though perspectives have turned grim, and it is unlikely that Danielle is still alive, the door remains open for justice to be served and closure to be granted. While the loss of a child is a pain no closure can ever assuage, the Stislicki family would like to have a place to mourn Danielle, and to more so celebrate her life, rather than having to wonder every day where she is and what became of her. On Mother's Day, 2017, Anne Stislicki wrote a poem to Danielle, and in part it reads, "I wish on the stars I see so bright at night, we will find out who did this with all of our might. I wish we could hold you just one more time, and that they didn't have to say you were the victim of a crime. I wish and pray for you each day, and hope we find the truth before the end of May. We will not give up the search for you. With all my love and hugs to you, Danielle, Olive Juice. The disappearance of Danielle Stislicky is a little different from the cases I typically select to cover. It's been on my list almost since the beginning because of listeners suggesting it and my own personal interest in the case itself. When I select a case, there's a certain set of criteria that must be met. First and foremost, there must be enough information for me to construct a coherent episode that digs in and explores in great detail. While Danielle's case itself has detail, it's somewhat limited, and background on Danielle herself is also in short supply. I tend to want to introduce you to the victim, discuss her upbringing, give you a clear portrait of who the person was, before going into what happened. In Danielle's case, while I was able to find some information, for the most part, there's a large void between her early years and the time she vanished. Danielle was a bright and beautiful young woman who had a world of potential ahead of her. All of that was taken away one evening when she left work early, planning to meet a friend for dinner, and someone took the opportunity to abduct her. All evidence seems to indicate that this abduction likely resulted in murder, and Danielle's life was more than likely prematurely ended by someone in a meaningless act of violence. The shockwaves that emerged from her disappearance continue to radiate today, and while this is a case which has garnered great interest, especially in her local community, the spotlight of national media attention has fluctuated. In some moments, the case is covered extensively, and at other times, it's breezed over in short articles or comments. That in and of itself makes the case a little more difficult to cover than what I usually go for. I like to be very detail-oriented. Another part of this case, which has made it challenging to cover, is the fact that Danielle disappeared just over a year ago. What was surprising to me was how much progress had been made on her case in that time, and the openness of her family when it came to discussing their feelings about Danielle and what they thought may have happened to her. This is a very difficult case to cover, and her family has been very direct about their struggles with it and the pain they feel every day that Danielle's fate goes unknown. The more I researched it, the more notes I took, the more clear it became that this was a case I had to do. I don't know that the answers are coming any faster now than they were a few months ago, but just seeing the way the community rallied around the family and the growing supporters they found through social media, I hope that by covering Danielle's story, I could, in some way, contribute to that movement. As a result of how fresh this case is, the theories are limited. That isn't necessarily a bad thing. In fact, a lack of theories allows for a stronger focus on what are considered the two most likely possibilities about what may have become of Danielle. This is also one of the very few times I will discuss the disappearance of an adult, and the chose-to-run-off theory will not be included. Typically, that theory is included because law enforcement mentions it, or there are details that make it a likely possibility. But in Danielle's case, no one has ever considered that a probable outcome of the investigation. Danielle was close with her family, worked with her mother, had strong friendships and connections, and had plans the night she disappeared. She appears to have arrived home, although there is some debate about that, which I'll get into in just a minute. The first theory about the disappearance of Danielle Stislicky is that she was abducted and likely murdered by Floyd Galloway Jr. Almost since the beginning, Galloway Jr. was considered a person of interest. When investigators were looking for anyone who may have wanted to harm Danielle or who showed an unnatural interest in her, Ann Stislicky recalled Galloway Jr.'s behavior in the workplace. According to Ann, Galloway Jr. used to frequently visit Danielle's desk and flirt with her, or find ways to hang around long enough to be able to engage her in conversation. At the time, she didn't think much of it, assuming that Galloway Jr. simply had an interest in Danielle and that wasn't uncommon. Danielle was hit on often, but in this case, it was obviously a little out of place. Typically, jobs don't like it when people are hanging around hitting on you while you're trying to get work done. According to Anne, Danielle didn't have the slightest interest in Galloway Jr. in terms of a romantic relationship. She thought he was nice, she treated him politely, but there was little else beyond that. Danielle was known for being polite and welcoming, and it appears that this situation was no different. We don't know exactly what the details are of how she found out, but at some point, Danielle learned that Galloway Jr. was not only married, but that his wife was sick. Several articles have pointed out that Galloway Jr.'s wife was suffering from leukemia. According to Anne, even though Danielle didn't have an interest prior to that, when she learned that information, she was disgusted by the fact that Galloway Jr. continued to try and hit on her. Galloway Jr. is currently serving time for his attack on the jogger in Hines Park in September of 2016. It's important to pay attention to the timeline here, as this was just 4 months before Danielle disappeared. He's also considered a suspect in another sexual assault case, where the composite drawing created from the victim's description closely resembles him. This means that, in the 4 months prior to Danielle's disappearance, Galloway Jr. was on the prowl and likely stalking women. Since both women survived and were able to give descriptions of him, it isn't hard to imagine that he may have become concerned about this and made the choice that the only way to ensure he wasn't identified was to kill his next victim. That's completely speculation, but also possible. I can't exactly get into the psychology of it, but that's one possibility that has to be explored. Another is, if he indeed abducted Danielle, that she fought against him, and her alleged death may have been a result of the struggle between the two. Speculation is well and good, but it comes down to facts when you're trying to figure out what happened. Obviously, many have theorized that Galloway Jr. was in fact the one who abducted Danielle. But what do we have to lend credence to it? Well, outside of the flirting he had been known to do with her, which is circumstantial at best, there were witnesses who identified Galloway Jr. as being in the parking garage of the building with the hood of his car up, and they saw him speaking to Danielle the night she vanished. Many have theorized that Galloway Jr. either had car trouble, or was simply pretending to, in order to create a context to ask Danielle for a ride home, or to catch her off guard. While some believe he used engine trouble to get a ride from Danielle, others think it's possible he told her he was afraid he wouldn't make it home, and asked if she could follow him to his place, just in case. Both of these are possibilities, and both would result in getting Danielle onto his territory. What I do find odd about it is that witnesses would later say they saw Danielle at Galloway Jr.'s Berkeley house the day she disappeared. While murder may have been on his mind, along with, sadly, the likelihood of sexual assault considering his past actions, it seems a bit odd to do this at home. He had a sick wife, although she was in and out of the hospital, so it's certainly possible she wasn't home at the time. It's also very brazen to go from attacking complete strangers to attacking someone you are personally linked to. The prior attack in the park appeared to be something more at random, while, if Galloway Jr. is the man responsible for Danielle's abduction, this would be more methodical and planned out. Perhaps this is why, to this day, Galloway Jr. has never been charged and Danielle has never been located. It's obviously something he would have thought about and executed with caution. In terms of evidence, we can't know for sure what authorities have. We know that pieces of the floor, a mattress, and a few other items were removed from the Berkeley home, and other items were later collected from Galloway Jr.'s wife. We also know that police were looking for a comforter, which they believe was used to wrap up and transport Danielle's body. They have said they have DNA evidence linking Danielle to the Berkeley house, though they have never specified the source of that DNA, nor the method by which they believe Danielle may have been murdered. Although they have been cryptic with a lot of the information they've released publicly, there has been some discussion of Danielle's Jeep. Although we don't know why, investigators have suggested there's a possibility that Danielle did not drive her Jeep to her apartment that night. This would imply that Galloway Jr., or someone he knew, drove it and left it there in order to stage the scene as if Danielle had gotten home that night. That makes it even more disturbing to imagine, but it also calls into question whether or not Galloway Jr. may have had an accomplice. He couldn't have driven her Jeep and had his car waiting for him, so likely someone else would have had to have given him a ride back, or he would have taken public transportation, though that's never been revealed. In the great deal of speculation which has revolved around this case, I've seen Galloway Jr.'s wife mentioned multiple times. Some have suggested that she, at a minimum, suspected he was involved in Danielle's disappearance, while others have gone so far as to allege that she was involved in the crime. There doesn't appear to be any evidence to support that, and even if she was uncooperative with police, that may simply have been a wife defending a husband she believed to be innocent. Either way, I find it highly unlikely that if she had known that he had done something, that she'd have kept her mouth shut about it, especially after Galloway Jr. was convicted of the Hines Park attack. According to several news articles, Galloway Jr.'s wife passed away as the result of leukemia not long after he was convicted, which essentially puts an end to the possibility of finding out whether or not she knew anything. That being said, I don't think there's anything to indicate that she did. It's also been stated that his wife and her sister, Galloway Jr.'s sister-in-law, did not speak again after the sister-in-law spoke out against him as possibly having information about Danielle's disappearance. Considering the weight of the evidence, what with witnesses, DNA, and Galloway Jr.'s other charges, why would authorities have not yet charged Galloway Jr.? For starters, the absence of a body often makes police and prosecutors hesitant to pursue charges. While it's possible he could be tried and convicted based on what they have, it would be much more likely that they'd succeed if they had Danielle's remains. They don't want to bring him to trial, have him found not guilty, and then get stuck on double jeopardy. In addition to that, Galloway Jr. has been very uncooperative with police, and a great deal of their evidence is circumstantial. As far as we are aware, they are not in possession of a murder weapon, and we know they haven't yet found Danielle. While they continue building their case, I do believe at some point we're going to see Galloway Jr. charged with Danielle's murder. It simply cannot currently be done under the circumstances, and they have many years with which to work, knowing that Galloway Jr. isn't going anywhere since he's in prison. For her family, it has to be difficult. It's like those moments when you have a thought on the tip of your tongue, but you just can't get it out. Most of the evidence that exists points to Galloway Jr. He was found guilty of attempting to do something similar to another woman. Authorities have him listed as the only person of interest. They very much would like to see justice done, but even more so than that, they would like to have Danielle so they might put her to rest and truly be allowed the space and time to mourn her loss. In the case of a disappearance, that mourning process is essentially stolen away. How can you mourn when you don't truly know what happened? While there are only two real theories in regard to this case, I tend to fall into the camp where I consider Galloway Jr. the most likely suspect. While the evidence doesn't yet support prosecution, or authorities are waiting for just one more piece to make the puzzle complete, he's certainly the prime suspect that needs to be looked into as closely as possible. Investigators have done a great job building a case against him, and while we may still yet be awaiting one more piece of evidence to completely prove it and eliminate the possibility of reasonable doubt, to me, this is the most likely theory. Galloway Jr., though, is not the only possibility, and that brings us to our second theory, that Danielle Stislicki may have been abducted by someone who is yet unknown to investigators, or possibly a name in one of their files that they have elected not to release publicly. Many of those who support this theory do so under the belief that if Galloway Jr. had in fact committed this crime, then he would have been charged by now. The process of charging someone with a crime of this veracity isn't as simple as it often appears on television shows and in crime novels. There's a lot that goes into it, and I consider it highly possible that Galloway Jr. hasn't been charged because authorities would like to work out some kind of a deal by which he will reveal the location of Danielle's remains. So is it possible that someone else committed this crime? Certainly. While there appears to be evidence and even DNA pointing to Galloway Jr., that doesn't mean someone else couldn't have been involved or even solely responsible. If Danielle left her job that night and began the drive home, she could have come across any number of people who may have been able to get her out of her vehicle or have taken her by some method. We can't even completely rule out the possibility that someone could have been at her apartment waiting on her. The possibility of a yet unknown suspect could go a long way towards explaining why her body has yet to be discovered. We do have to keep in mind that, early on, the family had spoken about the possibility that Danielle may no longer be in Michigan and that she might be being held against her will elsewhere. There are rivers and large areas of wilderness not far from where Danielle vanished. Hines Park, in and of itself, is a massive area which encompasses and connects to many other smaller parks, and rivers do run through and near it. Some have even suggested that Danielle could have been abducted by someone who still has her, and that she was not in fact murdered. At this point, it's all very speculative and hard to say. We don't know all of the people that police have looked at. And while Galloway Jr. stands out as the only person of interest they've mentioned publicly, this doesn't mean they don't have others they're looking at privately. In a case where a beautiful young woman goes missing, you have to consider everyone: ex-boyfriends, co-workers, friends, and even family. One detail that continues to fascinate me is the suggestion that Danielle did not park her Jeep at her apartment that night. Some have suggested that this means that whoever abducted her knew where she lived, but authorities did say her ID was found in the Jeep. The perpetrator could have simply driven to the address listed on it. It's a possibility, as are so many things in this case. Being that this case is not yet closed, and we don't appear to be directly on the precipice of that happening, there is a possibility that someone else was involved. There's even the possibility that Galloway Jr. was involved, but with the assistance of someone else. While this is a theory which cannot be dismissed, and is certainly possible, I do believe that regardless of what we ultimately see happening here, a total stranger abduction is probably much less likely than that of Floyd Galloway Jr. being involved in Danielle's disappearance. The disappearance of Danielle Stislicky is a very disturbing story. A young woman leaves work early and disappears from the face of the earth. None of the items Danielle was known to be in possession of that day have ever been found. Her cell phone, keys, and jacket have never been located. No remains have been found, and the one big piece of evidence that could finally provide a resolution has yet to be discovered. This is probably the most solvable case I've ever covered, but it's still early. We've seen cases go solved 20 and 30 years after the crime was committed. I don't believe Danielle's case will go unsolved for that long. For the sake of her family, I hope the answers are quick in coming. While nothing can ever return the light to their life that Danielle provided, hopefully, sooner than later, they can find some comfort in justice being served and the possibility of closure. Until then, the disappearance of Danielle Stislicky remains open and unsolved.
Case update. Galloway was convicted and sentenced to serve 16 to 35 years. While incarcerated, police elevated Galloway's status from person of interest to suspect in Danielle's case. Ultimately, Galloway has been charged with first-degree murder, a felony which carries a life sentence. Galloway has pled not guilty. Michigan Assistant Attorney General Jamie Horowitz is prosecuting the case, and has stated that they have an abundance of evidence, including witness statements, GPS from Danielle's phone showing her at Galloway's house, and DNA evidence from carpet in his home and his van. Judge James Brad agreed and directed the case to circuit court. In a preliminary hearing, Sarah, Danielle's mother Anna, and two of her co-workers testified. One co-worker explained that she had seen Galloway with the hood of his car up, apparently experiencing car trouble, and Danielle was walking towards him. Another co-worker testified that he saw Danielle drive out of the parking garage with Galloway in her passenger seat. A detective who originally questioned Galloway testified, quote, "His demeanor was kind of standoffish. He wouldn't look at us. Kind of stared off at the wall when we were talking to him. His hands were shaking," end quote. Police revealed that they had recovered Danielle's car keys and Fitbit near an M5 entrance ramp between Danielle's apartment and a Tim Hortons restaurant where Galloway was caught on surveillance footage at 8:38 p.m. the night Danielle disappeared. Footage also showed Galloway using the store's phone, then being picked up by a cab. The cab driver dropped Galloway off at an apartment complex directly across from the parking garage Danielle had allegedly driven him out of earlier that night. Police believe Galloway got a ride from Danielle after feigning car trouble. She brought him to his house where the crime took place. He then drove her Jeep back to his apartment, walked from the apartment to Tim Hortons, and took a cab back to pick up his car. A Michigan State forensics biologist testified that touch DNA connected to Danielle was found on carpet taken from the Galloway home. The forensic examiner said that, based on the lack of blood, he believed the cause of death was strangulation. It was decided that there was enough evidence to move forward with trial. The trial itself was delayed and is set to begin on April 20th, that being this coming Monday. More updates are pending regarding how the trial will turn out. Despite all of the evidence, Galloway maintains his innocence and has disregarded pleas from the family for the location of Danielle's remains. Experts believe Galloway will not reveal the location of her remains during the trial, and even if convicted, will likely not give up the information unless there's something in it for him. We can only hope that the Stislicki family will receive justice, and hopefully, the opportunity to lay Danielle to rest.
If you're interested in finding more information about the disappearance of Danielle Stislicki, there are many news articles and websites which discuss her case. FindDanny.org, FindDanny.org, is a website put together by her family that is a good place with a lot of information, as well as the Facebook page, Find Danielle Stislicki. If you have information about the disappearance of Danielle Stislicki, please contact the Farmington Hills Police Department or the FBI. What do you believe happened to Danielle? Tweet me at TraceEvPod, email me at TraceEvidencePod@gmail.com, or comment in the Facebook group. Add the hashtag FindDanny. That's FindDanny, to show support for Danielle and her family. If you'd like to support Trace Evidence, please visit the Patreon page located at patreon.com/traceevidence. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Trace Evidence and invite you to check out our website at trace-evidence.com. You can find links to the Patreon, social media accounts, as well as places to go to download the podcast and subscribe. I'm always eager to hear your feedback. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a good rating on iTunes and leave us a review. This will greatly help our reach and bring more attention to the cases I cover. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join me next week for another unsolved case on the next episode of Trace Evidence.